The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
We shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe to assure the survival and the success of liberty.
American prosperity is the bedrock of freedom and security all over the world.
An obligation to the heritage of liberty and dignity handed down to us by our forefathers.
It's time for the Pro-America Report with Ed Martin on The Answer San Diego.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro-America Report. Well, I have to tell you, I was getting ready to prepare for this, and there were lots of topics I was going to touch on. I was going to touch on the infrastructure failures, you know, that bridge crashing in Baltimore, terrible thing, and also the fact that there's a competence crisis. I tried to call my local town court. Long story, but it was there was a friend of mine got a speeding ticket. It wasn't me, I promise. And I was calling the court. Incompetence on every level. It was incredible. I mean, double talk. Didn't know what they were doing. Anyway, there's an incompetence problem. I was going to talk about a lot of things, and I decided before I saw the news, I would talk about Easter and the preparation for Easter, being as it's now midweek in what's called Holy Week for Christians. And then I saw Donald J. Trump posted a video, not a short video, a long video, maybe 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes. And in the video, he talked about his favorite book, the Bible. Many people's favorite book is what he says. And he talked about a special edition of the Bible. It's the King James version, so don't worry. But it's the putting the book together that Lee Greenwood did, the very famous singer who sings God Bless the USA. And it's called God Bless the USA Bible. And Donald Trump did a video endorsing this Bible and saying he partnered up with Lee Greenwood and wanted to sell the Bible. And it was perfect. In fact, excuse me, I saw Mark Krikorian, who is one of the leaders over at Center for Immigration Studies, a wonderful guy, a Missouri guy originally, by the way, and does good work and has been doing incredible work for a long time, highlighting the issues around immigration and the problems, et cetera, et cetera. Really articulate and really serious guy. So he said about Trump's sale of Bibles, he said, Trump is now a Bible salesman. It's almost too on the nose, and it was perfect. But here's what you don't know, I think. Most people don't realize. Donald Trump, from the time he was just a little boy, 2 or 3 or 4 years old, his father began taking him every single Sunday to what's called Marble Collegiate Church in Manhattan. And the man who led Marble Collegiate Church was Norman Vincent Peale. He was a pastor. And Norman Vincent Peale was famous from about 1935 until he died in the mid-90s, I think it was. Excuse me, mid-80s, as a great preacher. But more importantly, he wrote a book called The Power of Positive Thinking. And that book became one of the seminal sort of self-help books. It sold gazillions of copies. That and Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. Those two books, and Dale Carnegie, another Missouri man, was written early in the last century too. He was born in early last century. He wrote his book around the same time. Coming out of the Great Depression, there was a lot of sense, I think, that people wanted to know how to think about the American dream and what to think about what was going on. And these books tapped into it. But back to Norman Vincent Peale. every Sunday, young Donald Trump, all the way into himself into his 30s, when Peel died. I think Peel died in the 80s. There was another pastor that took over, and he was not as dynamic as Norman Vincent Peel. And I think that's when Trump stopped going to church every week. But for the formative years of his life, in other words, from the time he was a small boy, he did go away to boarding school, Trump did. So I don't know if he went to church when he was at boarding school. But whenever he was home, his father took him and his family to hear Norman Vincent Peale. And here's where it gets interesting. The Power of Positive Thinking is not a self-help book like Tony Robbins or a self-help book like all the gurus you know. It was a overtly and very prominently a Christian book. In fact, the earliest recommendations of Peel in the book are to learn by memory aspects of the Bible and to have a Bible and to read the Bible, but then also to memorize, go through your Bible and underline all the places where Christ gives you power. I think that's one of the things he says, where Christ is speaks of power for individuals. And he says, underline those and memorize them. And throughout his book and his life, which included all this self-help stuff about up from your bootstraps. He started and then sort of revolutionized, made popular the whole notion of the Horatio Alger stories. He started the Horatio Alger Society, which the whole those sets of books came out of the 1880s and 90s and into the early 1900s, and they were all about individuals making it on their own wits, all the odds stacked against them, but they pull themselves up from their bootstraps. Horatio Alger. Well, Horatio Alger was popular at the time, but then he died in the early 1900s, and he was out of favor. People didn't read him, but Norman Vincent Peale popularized him and the notion of up from your bootstraps. So here's Trump all those years, the seminal leader in his life, the man who, other than his father, who would have been present and talking like that, and he's talked about him before, is this extraordinary Christian pastor who said you have to, have to rely on Christ. Through Christ, all things are possible. That's one of his favorite passages, Peel's favorite passages. And so when you hear Donald Trump, albeit a flawed guy, I don't know how to judge him. You know, he divorced twice. I get it. You know, I understand, but I also get enough about the psychology of human beings, especially Christians, that a lot of them are fallen and a lot of them are fallen again, just like they're born again. A lot of them fall into sin again and again and again. And that the one steadfast point in a universe that spins is Christ and that truth. And so you can fall again and again and again and be born again. The truth is you can be born again once, according to the teaching, and even when you fall away in sin, you can come back to that you're saved. But the way I would see it, and I think the way Trump would see it, and the way Norman Vincent Peale would see it, is you're constantly renewing yourself. And the way to renew yourself is through the Bible, through the Word of God, and through prayer. And there you have it. So when Donald Trump in Holy Week says we're going to make prayer great again, when he says we're going to get back to our roots and have more people energized about religion, it's hard not to believe. Well, you have to really stretch yourself to believe that he doesn't mean it. And for me, it's easy to believe that it's going to happen, because that's the other thing Peel did, was he said, don't dream about what's going to happen. Speak it into reality. Speak it out loud. When you say it out loud, when you write it down, when you say, this is what I'm going to do, this is how I'm going to do it, you create a set of inertia, of energy in the direction. And for Peel, it was always Christian energy. It was always energy of Christ. And it was an inspiration to generations and generations of people. Inspired the country, inspired the communities, made a great, great difference. And my point again is, don't look at Trump and say, how can he talk about a Bible? Look in the mirror and say, why can't I? Why won't I? Or if you want to, say to yourself, I'm better than he is. I didn't mess up my marriages or whatever you want to think about the other person. And therefore, you can get there too. It's open to everybody. Christ's arms are open to everybody. And the sacrifice of Easter, the sacrifice of Good Friday, actually, and the gift of Easter, the risen Christ, is there for everybody. And one of the great pathways to it is the scripture, the holy words in that Bible. And so when Donald Trump invites you to get a Bible, maybe you don't have a Bible, or maybe him asking you to get one is going to make you say, I'm going to get one and do something more with it. Whatever it is, use it as a chance for you, not for him. Use it as a chance for you, not for Lee Greenwood. Use it as a chance for you and your family. I remember someone telling me that there's nothing more powerful than a father expressing his faith. That mother is nurturing in a family and all that, but the father expressing his faith is powerful. And Trump's figure in our community, our America, is a kind of father figure. You don't have to like him. I'm just describing. And him making this a priority is yet again an example for us, an example towards us. And I have to say, I can't help but think it's so powerful. It's so persuasive. It's so perfect for Holy Week. So there you have it. I hope you have a good Bible. I hope you have a blessed Easter. I hope if you don't know the Lord Jesus Christ, that you'll get a Bible and you'll find your way there, and that you'll pray for me and I'll pray for you and so many of the folks that are with us on the Pro America Report. That's, by the way, that's what being Pro America is about. Not for broken pasts, not for errors, sins, but for the future and for the righteousness and for goodness. So happy Easter, everybody. God bless you. God bless America. Thank you to our team, Ryan Height, Mason Mohan, others on our team, Gwen, Carolyn. Thank you for all you do for our work. Thank you to the folks in San Diego. And we'll talk to you soon. Happy Easter. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Talk to you soon. Welcome back. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Very, very interesting man to talk to next. Brent Hamacek. He's a vice president, associate publisher at Human Events Media Group. He's written numerous books and has collaborated with our old friend Charlie Kirk, who's over at Turning Point, of course. And Brent has been a speaker all across the country, but also at ISI, the Intercollegiate Studies Institute. And he's got a book, which is what we're really talking about. The book is called Dissidently Speaking. Change the words, change the war. I thought he was going to say change the words, change the world, but change the war. We'll get to that. It just is out a few weeks. Welcome, Brent, to the program. How are you?
I couldn't be any better. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm grateful that that you had me on, give me the opportunity to share some thoughts and ideas.
So my old boss, the late Phyllis Schlafly, used to say half a book is its title, because people just are going to react to the title. Probably you and I could say half a book. If you're an author, you know this. Half a book is the title. Half a book is the first chapter. And the other half is the rest of the book. I don't know. There's not enough halves there. Yogi Berra would be proud. But the title, Dissidently Speaking, Change the Words, Change the War. How'd you get to that title? What does it mean to you? Well, tell us about that.
Well, I'd love to take credit for getting to the title, but it actually was the contrivance and idea of my partner and dear friend, Felisa Blazek, who came up with it. And the idea is that from a dissident perspective, that people who believe in the original ideas of America, those being the ones that came to us really from John Locke about a minimal government that protected life, liberty, and property and did little else. Those of us who believe in that sort of limited form of government and not encroaching upon our individual rights, we're finding ourselves in this world today having to act more and more like dissidents, like those we saw in Eastern Europe in the last half of the last century, being forced to fight back from the inside against the walls of a system that are starting to collapse around us. And so the title comes in part from an essay I published back in 2021 in January that went viral internationally. And then the change the war, change the words, change the war part is fairly simple, because right now we can see that in this country, we are at war, not just with one another, but we're almost at war within ourselves. And a lot of it, my contention is, a lot of it has to do with the very sloppy use of language, the deliberate misuse of language. And it's clouded our ability to think critically and to think skeptically. So we need to be dissidents. We need to change the words we use, and then we can change the nature of this war that we're fighting. And there is a full breakdown of that book title.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. Dissidently Speaking is the name of the book. Brent Hamacek is our guest. As he mentioned, his co-author is Felisa Blazek. I want to make sure to mention her on this. Okay, so I think people agree that the book cover, by the way, is also compelling. It's got two sneakers and is right on the left and left on the right. You know, it's kind of the images. So everybody kind of feels that, right? Everybody's yelling at each other, fighting amongst themselves. You can't trust the news. If you're watching Fox and you don't like Fox, you're more liberal, you don't trust them. You watch MSNBC, you don't trust them. You kind of, fake news is everywhere. Politicians are you know, lying or just speaking, but I repeat myself generally. All right. So, what's to do? You know, we all see the problem. As I was going through the book, I thought, yep, I get it. But tell us what do you do now? And how do you not, if you put your head up and you're a dissident, truly, you get your head taken off if you're on the wrong side of that. And that's maybe the biggest problem, is this self-censorship.
Self-censorship is a big problem. And I address it directly in the book. But look, one of the keys to being an effective dissident, and it, by the way, the cover design, thanks for complimenting it, also Felisa's work. But the key to being a dissident is to understand that there are people in this country who are actively and deliberately trying to take away our individual liberty. Now, this isn't new, by the way. This is something that's as old as man. Long before we had the word totalitarian, we had totalitarians. And this has been the nature of how men have lived for almost all of history in almost all places. So there's nothing new about it. But one of the contentions I make is that because we use these labels of right and left, which in the first chapter of the book, I prove, and I mean prove, that those labels are non-existent and don't work. We want to fight against everybody who doesn't agree with us. We think they're all the enemy. But the key to being an effective dissident is to know when to push and to know when to pull. I like to characterize this by thinking of this totalitarian beast that we're facing in this country taking a physical form of an obelisk. Okay. So if you have that obelisk and you can imagine inside of it, at its base, the strongest part are the people that are aggressively trying to take control of our lives and subject us. But as you float up through that obelisk, there are all sorts of people who are seeming to go along with this, but have no real understanding of it. They don't want to be serfs any more than you or I or any member of your audience do, but they're caught up inside of that obelisk. Now, there's two ways to topple an obelisk. One is you can push really hard against the base until you generate enough momentum that you tip it over. The other one is to throw a hook up around the top and pull it down towards you. But I like to say there's a third way to topple an obelisk, and that's to push and to pull at the same time. Hmm. And so our trick is to understand the difference between those against whom we need to push and those for whom we need to pull in towards us by reaching out to them, constructively engaging them, asking them questions, listening to what they say, and trying to make a compelling argument. Final quick thought.
Yeah.
I make another argument that the two most compelling and powerful figures in all of Western civilization, one on the secular side and one on the spiritual side, are Socrates and Jesus Christ. Now, they have two things in common. One is they both died for their activism. The other is that they both changed the course of all of civilization by asking questions. Hmm. And so I would urge people to embrace their inner Socrates in Jesus Christ, ask questions, force those that perhaps don't agree with you to contemplate their own answers, And maybe you'll get some conversions along the way.
Fascinating, interesting comparison there. I like that. By the way, I wanted to make sure to put it, we're talking offline. Our guest is Brent Hamacek, and his book is Distantly Speaking, Change the Words, Change the War, available anywhere you get books. I'm looking at it right now on Amazon. Also, he works through his website, bridgecharity.com, bridgecharity.com. You can learn more about what he's doing and some of the efforts. It's a nonprofit, 501c3 nonprofit, specifically trying to promote civil discourse. Okay, I heard you, and I think it's very impressive, but I'm and a couple minutes left only. But the world is so nasty right now. You sound so nice and civilized, and the book is so serious minded. It's a nasty world. Is, you know, is part of it get off of the places, social media, where it's nasty, and go to, you know, is it a sort of a localism argument? Is it how do you beat the just nasty nature of this?
Wonderful, wonderful question. Look, one of the chapters in the book is making the argument that we have become, as a people, addicted to confrontation. Now, I'm a recovery guy, so I know a little bit about this, and the symptoms are all there. We're neuropathing for it now. We're craving it, just like I used to crave a glass of Jack Daniels. And the first step in recovering from that sort of an addiction is to admit, in this case, that our national lives have become unmanageable. The next thing you have to do is you have to take a look in the mirror, and you have to own your 1% at least of what it is that's got us to this point. Right. So reducing the level of nastiness starts with commences with a look in the mirror and a bit of ownership of how we might individually be contributing to it ourselves. Social media plays a big role. It is an enabler, and it is, if you will, the needle that goes into the arm. So understanding these things, appreciating and acknowledging that we have an addiction problem to confrontation is a very big part to getting better. In fact, that admission is the necessary first step.
Well, it's a very helpful. First of all, your voice out there, I think, is very. It's great to have you on the show. Distantly Speaking, again, is a book. Change the Words, Change the War. Out just a few weeks ago. Brent Hamacek has been our guest. His co-author is Felicia Blazek. You should check it out, and we'll have you back again, sir. It's a helpful kind of dialogue, and your great voice on it. We got to take a break, though. I'm up against the break. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. I'll put all those links up there to Brent's book on social media, and be right back here on the Pro America Report. Back in a moment. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on a Pro America Report. Time to check in with our old friend, Colonel John Mills, retired Army colonel. Of course, he is the author of two books, The Nation Will Follow, firsthand experiences fighting the deep state. A very important book, I have to say. I know the second book, War Against the Deep State, which I wrote a foreword to, I enjoy too. But that first one, John, The Nation Will Follow, especially as you illustrated, the local impact and how don't get caught up in thinking about the next presidential race only, but instead find out ways to impact things, and, you know, where you are. So welcome back, Colonel John Mills, retired Army Colonel. How are you, sir?
Oh, Ed, thank you so much. Just an absolute honor to be on your show again.
Well, so let me, you know, when you see where we are, I had someone say in my open today, I was talking about the fact that we can't be blind anymore. Now, you weren't blind. You were writing about it at the time. But a lot of us were saying, man, something doesn't seem right. And then somehow in the last maybe 2.5-3 years, the scales really fell off. It wasn't just fake news that was, you know, destructive, CNN or somebody being fake news. It was that the government was using the censorship industrial complex was dominating us in this country. Right. I mean, it's and so that's good. We've got our eyes open. But are we able to stop it?
Well, the initial argument and presentation, I don't know if this is the only part a hearing we'll have, but so when Missouri v. Biden, now known as for some reason Murphy versus Missouri, has been heard It really, some, you know, when I'm kind of citing Matt Tybee here, you know, he and who's been a, you know, a real pioneer in this area of pointing out government censorship. He didn't feel it went well. I listened to parts of it. I don't feel it went well, but at the same time, I mean, Alito was very, clear the power of the federal government calling somebody in for a White House meeting. And I've done that. I've been part of that with big tech. And just by the mere fact you're somebody at the White House and you're calling, yeah, that represents the full force effect. And also the implication, if you don't agree with the government, the government can come after you. But I mean, I think Alito brought that up. Now the quote of the whole session was, of course, Justice Brown, who Jackson,
yeah, yeah.
Who
Ketanji,
Jackson Brown, who said, she used the term hamstringing, which I thought was an inappropriate term for the year 2024. I guess it's okay to use it, but she didn't want to. She felt the government was being hamstrung by any of this. And it's like, hold on a second here. The Constitution is to hamstrung or string the government. We can't have an unconstrained government in any way, shape, or form. That's the whole purpose of the boundaries of the Constitution. It's not to constrain the citizen. It's to hamstring the government. It's to show the government boundaries. And so that was concerning that she doesn't understand that concept. And again, there's nothing wrong with government meeting with big tech, absolutely, or meeting with any group. But there's a difference between meeting and then essentially intimidating or cooperating. It's essentially RICO in reverse, where you have a racketeering, where there's a collusion between government and big tech to silence, target, and censor citizens. That's not correct. That's absolutely verboten and wrong. But so it remains to be seen. I don't know if there's a second set of arguments or that was it. That only 90. I believe the fate of the republic is could only depend on 90 minutes. Some didn't feel it went well, but at the same time, can't believe that government would. Now, part of it was they said government can't collude, government can't direct. But government can meet. Okay, yeah, government can meet. I don't have any problem with that, but that it can rapidly turn into collusion and unlawful behavior. That's the big concern.
We're talking again with John Mills and his book, War Against the Deep State. He's a retired Army colonel. In the book, you talk about these, extra constitutional actions. You call them, branches of the government out beyond the original ones. And I guess my question back to you again is, I see what you see, but then I say to myself, are we a majority? Do the people that are seeing what we see, are we a majority? In other words, if the power of the deep state, for lack of a better phrase, or the narrative machine, as I call it, is so strong. I just wonder sometimes if we're sort of whistling past the graveyard.
Well, I hope not. I think we're challenged to get, and you being a lawyer understand, it's the whole concept of achieving remedy. And I think part of the argument in front of the Supreme Court was interesting because they said, well, who's the harmed or aggrieved party? None of these plaintiffs are actually aggrieved parties. And I'm going, well, I'm jumping up and down, waving my hand. How about me? I've been thrown off of Twitter. I've been, my professional career abilities have been greatly and monetarily affected. If they need somebody who's an injured party, hey, I'm definitely me. And it's a lot more than just me. So that was, I think the challenge is the citizenry readily able to achieve remedy. We have to figure out a better way than massive court battles that are just the deep pockets of big tech. Right. It falls into their favor. I mean, the common citizen, we have to have a better way for the common citizen to achieve remedy. And whether it's me or the J6ers, the J6ers who have had exculpatory evidence essentially denied use of the films. All of these things, we have to have a better ability to achieve remedy by the average citizen other than monumental, humongous, expensive court battles.
Yeah, it's well, and again, back to your first book, and we're talking with Colonel John Mills, The Nation Will Follow. You know, a lot of the work, especially uncovering what's happened, happens at the local level, you know, and you can do it sort of hand to hand. That's the phrase, you know, nonviolent, of course, but hand to hand to be able to get to the bottom of what's going on. How have you, how does the social media, how does social media impact your call to local action, John? And by that, I mean, it feels like everybody can feel, let me say it cleaner. Everybody can feel engaged from their very phone, right? But that's different mm-hmm. than actually doing something.
That's an important point. Social media allows us to communicate, allows us to develop ideas, but still that doesn't necessarily represent action. It does represent a better way to communicate, share a lie, things like that. But in the end, it's still action on the ground level, right where the person lives. And that means there's no getting around it. You have to be a voice heard in these seven key governance functions common to all of our counties, towns, or cities. And that's the county council, the school board, the registrar, the election board, sheriffs, judges, and prosecutors. That's where the action has to take place, and citizens have to figure out a way to be heard. I mean, it's been painful in Fulton County, Georgia, but part of it was, I mean, there was many people to credit, but Alfie of Fulton County prosecutor, Fannie Willis. I mean, it took a while to get that out there. Part of it was social media, and that helped. Mm-hmm. But it really took a number of people to point out, hey, this person was a weaponized tool of the Biden team, even though she was a county prosecutor.
Right.
And right. That's helped immensely. But we still got Pennsylvania. We still got Michigan. We still got Arizona. And we got to deal with these issues.
John Mills, we're out of time. What's the best website for people? Send them to. Again, the two books are The War Against the Deep State. That's the newer book, and as well as The Nation Will Follow. Where do you send people to find out more and get connected with you?
Yeah, Colonel Rhett John, Colonel R.E.T. John, Substack, Getter, and Truth. And the book, okay. If you want signed copies, go to Lindell My Store. You can get a nice bundle package or just go to Amazon.
Great. All right. Thank you. Colonel John Mills, a retired Army colonel. His two books, I'll put links up on social media. We'll take a break. Be right back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Back in a moment.
This is the Phyllis Schlafly Report, presenting a daily conservative pro-family perspective since 1983 and continuing the legacy of Phyllis Schlafly. Now here's the president of Phyllis Schlafly Eagles, Ed Martin.
The Supreme Court's 5-4 decision that allows the federal government to cut Texas's border wire was a terrible decision. The failure of the majority on the Supreme Court to explain this capitulation to the Biden administration's policy is both divisive and harmful, and it's insulting to Texas. The Biden administration has also sued Texas to remove its orange buoys in the Rio Grande that are meant to stop people from trying to swim because they are too often in danger. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton responded to the Supreme Court's ruling by saying this: "The Supreme Court's temporary order allows Biden to continue his illegal effort to aid the foreign invasion of America." He went on that the destruction of Texas's border barriers will not help enforce the law or keep American citizens safe. This fight is not over, and I look forward to defending our state's sovereignty. Ken Paxton was right amid the escalating interference by the D.C. elite. He was right to side with the local efforts to maintain law and order in Texas. There is a conflict between armed Texas officials and federal agents when the Texans are denied access by the feds to a border park. Biden wrongly invokes federal power over the border not to implement law and order, but rather to open it to illegality that includes drug smuggling. A majority of the Supreme Court has held that the individual right of self-defense to be armed under the Second Amendment is protected, and they should likewise acknowledge state authority to protect itself against the lawless immigration and all the bad things that come with it that Joe Biden is allowing. Many Texans feel compelled to arm themselves in self-defense for routine trips to, say, the grocery store because of their fear of the hordes of illegals let in by the Biden administration. Sound and secure borders are critical to a well-functioning nation. This is not an option, but a requirement. Texas demonstrated bravery by taking matters into their own hands, but the federal government and Supreme Court repeatedly took action harmful to the health of Texas and the entire country.
This has been the Phyllis Schlafly Report with Ed Martin, president of Phyllis Schlafly Eagles. American citizenship should never be taken lightly. That's why you need to go to phyllisschlafly.com and be part of the dialogue on the need for border security and an accurate census, the travesty of sanctuary cities, and voting rights for illegals. Voice your opinion at phyllisschlafly.com. Thanks for listening, and join us again for the Phyllis Schlafly Report.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on a Pro America Report. Hey, wrapping things up. This is a what you need to do, a window today, what you need to do, because this is an important topic. And I don't really have as good an action item for this as I like. Sometimes you say, you know, call so-and-so, show up at such-and-such, you know, read this, you know, do that, vote this way. Sometimes it's more specific. This is a broader slightly, but I have to tell you, the persecution of Jeff Clark is such a black eye on this country. Jeff Clark has a bar complaint against him from the DC, the District of Columbia Bar Association. And they have an unwritten rule, the DC bar, because you can imagine the DC bar, there's a lot of lawyers that work in the government that the DC bar, you know, it would have the jurisdiction over in some sense. Many of them would be practicing law and be DC bar members. Then they become attorney general or associate attorney general, or they become the general counsel to the Department of Homeland Security, whatever it is. And if it were possible for any single person to file a complaint against a DC bar, you know, a lawyer in the DC bar, you'd have complaints all the time, right? If you're a Democrat and you hate the Republican administration, you'd file a bar complaint, all that. So the DC bar has had a rule, an unwritten rule. I don't think it's written, but it's difficult to imagine how you'd make it, codify it formally. But the unwritten rule is basically, if you don't have personal knowledge, firsthand knowledge of conduct, you can't file a bar complaint about it, right? So you can't be, you know, living in Missouri and you say, the attorney general just did something I don't like. I'm going to file a bar complaint against him and file it. Because generally when you file a bar complaint, you're allowed to file it without any, There's no cost. There's no penalty if it's deemed that it was not, you know, valid. So it's wide open for the citizens to say, hey, I live in Missouri. I'm in St. Louis and I see this lawyer. He acted badly. I file a bar complaint against him. I want people to know. The bar would look into it. The Missouri bar. DC said, look, we're not going to have it so that every time somebody hates what the attorney general does or the general counsel somewhere, that there's bar complaints. So you have to have personal, firsthand knowledge of the conduct. Well, in the case of Jeff Clark, the complaints against him were that he was advising his client, the president of the United States, about what possible legal options he had, which is what lawyers do. In fact, lawyers come up with as many different scenarios as they can possibly imagine as a way to manage or understand risk. So when you're sitting with a client, you say, well, it could go like this. It could go like that. There could be these facts. There could be this, that. They could use this law. They could try that law. You could have this judge. You have to take a whole bunch of factors in place. You have to take them into account to manage risk and make decisions about it. So Jeff Clark, by the nature of his job, very senior in the Department of Justice, a guy who had served in the highest levels of the Bush administration, W. Bush, and had been practicing law, Harvard graduate. He'd been practicing law, well-respected. He's now advising President Trump, who's trying to figure out what happened with this election, where tens of millions of Americans felt like and still feel it didn't go the way it seemed to be headed. there were things that happened that did not seem to be normal in the way elections work. Stopping in the middle of the night and all these things. And so as a good lawyer, you're giving all the different options. And some of the options were you could stop things this way. You could go forward that way. You could just take it the way it's going. All the different options. A good advocare, the root, Latin root, give voice to. A good advocate is going to give voice to all the different theories, all the ideas, all the things that were going on. And suddenly, because there was this massive effort to make it so no one would ever question the election of 2020, you should be afraid. You'll be sued by Dominion or others if you're saying the wrong things. And you'll settle if you're Fox News because you're worried about it. And if you're a lawyer, you got left-wingers, Democrats, not even left-wingers, Democrats, who say we can't upset the status quo, which is that we're not going to allow questioning. We're not going to have auditable elections. So go after all these different lawyers, whether it's Dean Eastman or Jeff Clark or Rudy Giuliani or Sidney Powell or any of them. 60, they had a project called the Project 65. And here's the point. Jeff Clark has had an illustrious career, and the D.C. bar next week will start a bar trial against him for being a good lawyer and a smart lawyer and a lawyer who cares and a lawyer who represents his client, a lawyer who is an advocate. And the two things that I deeply, deeply regret is that the D.C. bar is doing this at all, but also that there's not more lawyers saying out loud, this isn't right. This shouldn't happen. You could disagree vehemently. You could even tell all your friends, you could never hire Jeff Clark. He recommended this. That's not a theory. But you cannot use the bar and the license as lawfare against individuals doing their jobs, doing what they're hired to do. There's no allegation of criminal conduct. The DC bar is not talking about criminal conduct. They're not allowed to. And the most despicable part about it, by the way, is in this case, the DC bar could not have a first person account because the people in the room were Donald Trump and Jeff Clark, maybe a few others. And instead, they accepted a letter from Senator Dick Durbin, Illinois Democrat, partisan, saying, oh, yeah, we got a problem. You got to look at this. And they used that as a complaint. And they broke their norms. Their norms that said, we're not going to do these, you know, third party, I think something was really rotten, please do something about it. They said, oh, in this case, Senator Durbin's got a senior position in the Senate Judiciary Committee. We're going to let him make this objection. And we're going to use it as a basis to punish Jeff Clark. So the to-do is pray for Jeff Clark. He's a faithful guy. Find a way to track this story. I don't think Jeff has put out much request for a legal defense fund, but if he does, we'll make sure to put that out there because it's costing him a lot of money. And demand that people do the right thing and stop this madness. Anyway, that's all I've got. Jeff Clark, what a good guy. We got to go. Thank you, Ryan Height. I'm Mason Mohan. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Talk to you then.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.